So John 20, starting at verse 24. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name.
And it's very exciting to be able to welcome along this afternoon another character today from the passage that we just read. Amazingly, Thomas himself is actually here with us this afternoon. And so without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to him so he can tell us firsthand what he knows about King Jesus. Thomas.
Well, as Sim said, my name's Thomas. You probably know me as Doubting Thomas, which I've always thought was a little bit unfair, actually, because, you know, 2,000 years of people looking down their noses at me, like, how could he possibly have doubted? But come on. I mean, if someone you loved had died and you'd seen them buried in the ground, and then your friends say, "Oh, he's alive. I mean, you're not just going to swallow that, are you? I mean, you would have doubted, wouldn't you? See, you may think we first century types are simple souls, but we're not stupid. We're not stupid. We know dead men do not rise. We know that. But I am here to tell you that this dead man did rise. For me, it all started when my brother, he reckoned that Jesus of Nazareth was the one. You probably know that we'd been waiting for the Lord to send the one, the Christ, the King, who would sort everything out. And this Jesus of Nazareth, he claimed he had come to fulfill the promises of old. So we watched him. And he went round doing the sorts of things the prophet said the Christ, the King, would do. He opened the eyes of the blind. The lame got up and walked. He set people free from the guilt that weighed them down. He went round sorting things out. So I gave up the day job and I followed him. And I tell you, I've never known anyone like him. Oh, he had such power. He'd run rings round the religious authorities. He would speak, and the crowd would sit and listen for hours. And there was this one time when we were out in a boat, out in the sea, and a storm blew up, and he just spoke a word. And the waves were still. It was like he was so powerful, even the sea obeyed him. And yet he was so gentle. He set children on his knee. He always had time for the sort of people that no one else could be bothered to talk to. I loved being with him. I'd do anything for him. One point I even said I'd die for him. I mean, that's how sure I was. He was the King who'd come to sort things out. But then, well, you know what happened. They arrested him. There was this sort of a trial. And they crucified him. He was the King, we thought. The King who was going to sort things out. The King who was going to sort things out was going to be big. Had to be big. Bigger than sickness. Bigger than storms. Bigger than death itself. So when they buried Jesus, we knew. We knew he wasn't the king. It couldn't have been. It couldn't have been the king. He was dead. I remember that weekend, I was heartbroken. I'd lost a friend. First and foremost, I'd lost a friend. But I was also really confused. I felt such a fool. I'd given up 3 years of my life following this man. And it all seemed to be stacking up. I don't know how I got him so wrong. And then Sunday morning, some of the women, they go and visit the tomb to tidy things up. And they come racing back and they tell us his body has gone. Peter and John, they go and look for themselves and they come back saying, it's true, his body's gone. And then Mary comes in and says, she's seen him alive. That was way too much for me. So I went out for a long walk just to kind of clear my head. And when I came back Sunday evening, you know, I was hoping everyone would have calmed down a bit, got a sense of perspective. But what they say is, well, it's just what John says here in verse 25. They say, we have seen the Lord. They've all seen him, all of them. They were my friends. You know, I respected them. But that night, I thought they were going mad. We had seen him dead. I told them, I said it was just wishful thinking. I said they were seeing what they wanted to see. They were just egging each other on. They should let him go. So I said, John's got it there in verse 25. It's exactly what I said. I said, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. I wasn't trying to be difficult. It's just that this is not the kind of thing you just go along with. You need evidence. And over the years, I come across some people who think it was wrong of me to ask, you know, that I needed evidence. They look at me as though wanting evidence was somehow unspiritual. Science, they say, well, that's all about looking at the evidence. But this is a matter of faith. And faith, they say, is all about believing things for which there isn't any evidence. And people say that. And it really frustrates me because that's not how we saw things. I mean, in the Bible, faith isn't about a blind leap in the dark. Faith is about trusting in our God. And the reason we trust him is because he gives us good reason to trust him. If I was going to trust that God was in this, that Jesus was alive, I was going to need evidence. I tell you, the next few days are really hard. Sitting in this room with these guys, and they all believe that Jesus is alive, and I am the only one who doesn't. It's like they're all in on a joke that I don't get. You ever felt that? Perhaps at church, and all of the rest of them, they seem to believe. They're all grinning away because they believe. And you're thinking, am I the only one? Am I the only one who's finding this hard to swallow? Well, that was me. That was me. And then next Sunday, I didn't go out. I stayed with them. And John is right. Verse 26, he's right. The door was locked. The door was locked because we were afraid. We were afraid of what the authorities might do to us. And John is right. Jesus came and stood among us. My head was spinning. My heart was pounding. Dead men do not rise. But there he was, just standing right in front of me. I'd seen him dead. And now he was more alive than ever, there, right in front of me. And he says, peace be with you. And his voice calmed me down like the storm. I was stilled. And then he spoke to me. It turns out he knew that I hadn't believed. But he didn't talk down his nose at me. He just held out his hands. He offered me his side, just like I'd asked. The door was locked. I didn't know how he got in, but this was no ghost. He was offering me his side. He was inviting me to touch him. He was letting me prod him and poke him. I fell on my knees. And what I blurted out was what it says here in verse 28, "My Lord and my God." You probably don't know what a big deal it was for me to say that, to use those words. I'm a Jew, you see, and if you're a Jew, you are brought up to know that there is no God but the Lord our God. You would not dream of calling a man God. But as I fell to my knees, that it made sense to call him that. One time before, I'd asked him to show me God, and he had said, if I'd seen him, I had seen God. It made no sense to me. Didn't get what he meant. But now I did. You see, the one who was to come was going to be bigger than death. Well, who is bigger than death? No one. No one. Only God himself. And that was the point. That was the point. There he was, standing in front of me, my Lord and my God. And when I said that, when I said, my God, he didn't rebuke me for blasphemy. It's like, at last, I got it. I got it. I'd seen who he is. And here's what he said to me. Verse 29. Do you see what he said to me? He said, because you have seen me, you have believed. You have believed. You see, you all call me doubting Thomas. But the point is, I came to believe. And you say, well, it's all right for you, isn't it? You saw him. What about us? But do you see what he goes on to say? Do you see? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. You see, ever since me, there have been millions and millions who have not seen, but who have come to believe. And I don't know, maybe you're here and you're someone you'd love to believe, but you just can't. You've spent years tying yourself in knots, trying to make yourself believe. I couldn't just make myself believe. I needed evidence. And that's what John has given you in his book. Did you see what he says? Verse 30. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which were not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe. Friends, faith is not blind. It needs reasons to believe, to trust. And if you've never looked at the reasons, here's where to look. Look at all that John has written about Jesus. Look for yourself. It's the only way you'll ever come to believe. Maybe you're like, well, it's lovely for you, Thomas, you know, to believe all this, but it's not really my thing. You don't understand. I'm not saying, here's a religious story that kind of works for me. It's what people often say, isn't it? I hear them saying it. They say, well, Jesus died, and then out of love for him, people like me told a story about his rising from the dead. And if that story works for you, that's, you know, great, lovely. Look, when they crucified him, it was over. Over. I mean, there was no story to tell. If we had gone round telling everyone that Jesus was the great king, everyone would have laughed. They knew he'd been crucified. Who's heard of Simon of Perea? Who's heard of Judas the Galilean? Who's heard of Simon Bar-Giora? See, they each had followers, each of them. Each of their followers thought that they might be the king. Each was killed by the Romans. And for each of them, that meant it was over. If you claim to be the king and end up dead, there is no story to tell. But friends, that's the point. That's the point. This Jesus didn't end up dead. Look, I'm saying he lived in history and he died in history and he rose again in history and I met him. I touched the scars. And you say, oh, well, it can't have happened. But that's what I thought till I looked at the evidence. And if you've never looked, here's why I want to plead with you to look. John sums it up in verse 31. He says, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. The fact that Jesus is alive means he's not just another religious teacher. He is the Christ. That is, he is the King, the Son of God. See, there I was poking him and prodding him and examining him. And what this means is one day he will be examining us. He is the King. We are answerable to him. And that is a big claim to make. So friends, please don't take a blind leap of faith and just hope it isn't true. The stakes are too high. Look at the evidence. And look at what this King has come to give us. Do you see how he goes on? Believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. He's come to give us life. Life. I used to think life was having my own business and my family and holidays and health. And that was life. That was what I was living for. Well, I've come to see that we are made for something way bigger. We are made for God. We are made for God. And my friends sometimes told me that living for God would be deathly. No, it's life. It's life, knowing him, being loved by him. It's life. I mean, all the other things, they're good things, but they rust and they rot and they spoil and they fade and they are ruined by illness and they are snatched away by death. But this life, life with him, starts now and it lasts forever. Never be snatched away. That's what this King came to give us all. He came to sort things out. That's what the prophet said. And one day he will. He will sort everything out. But what I learned is that it all starts with him sorting us out. Me. And that's what he's done. He's given us the life that we were made for. So please don't take a blind leap of faith and just assume, oh, this can't be right. Remember me, doubting Thomas. But I didn't just walk away. I looked again. And I'm so glad I did, because he opened my eyes to see. I'm going to pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you that you are alive today, that we've not gathered this afternoon in memory of a dead religious teacher, but we have gathered in the presence of the King. We thank you that you came to live and die and rise again to give us life with you forever. And where we find that hard to believe, please would you open our eyes to see again the reasons we have to trust you. And we pray that for the honor of your name. Amen.
Mike, I've just got one question here for you to ask on Thomas's answer on Thomas's behalf. But it's a great one, a great kind of examining the evidence question. It says this: given that John wrote his gospel many years after the events he describes, can we really be sure that Thomas really existed?
It's a fair question, a right question to ask. I sometimes say to people, when do you think John wrote his gospel? And I suppose some people hear all kinds of stories of it's the second century and so on. Some scholars would argue that John wrote his gospel before AD 70, just because he makes so little of the fact that the temple was destroyed in AD 70. He doesn't really make much of that. Some argue that, you know, if he was writing after that, he'd really underline the fact that a temple has been destroyed. But it's some time between, you know, 70, 80. It's the sort of 30, 40 years after the time of Jesus. So it's not second century, it's 30 or 40 years. People worry, they go, well, hold on, that's quite a long time for John just to be writing things. I mean, can you remember stuff you did 30 or 40 years ago? Well, of course, really significant stuff you can remember. I remember speaking to a D-Day landing veteran about 40 years after he landed, and you know, the day was really clear in his mind because it was a big day. But even if it's 30 or 40 years, which you think, well, there's a lot of slippage in that, the point is, John didn't just write this down. Like, it wasn't sort of 30 or 40 years after Jesus, there was a kind of, now, whatever happened to Jesus of Nazareth? Let's see if we can sort of write it up, you know, for a sort of documentary on Channel 4 or something. This stuff was already in circulation. So within a few weeks of Jesus' death and resurrection, the Christians were going around preaching that Jesus was the king. And people sometimes say, oh, well, there's the Gospels. And then Paul, of course, you know, he really blew things out of proportion. Paul was writing his letters before most of the Gospels. And the Gospels was a writing down of material that was already being circulated. We know that because when you sort of compare and contrast the different Gospels, you see the kind of the chunks that are the same. Because it wasn't the first time Matthew thought, I'll tell you what, I'll write this down. He's pulling together stuff that's been going around for a while. So if your kind of question is, weren't they written so far away from the original events that we can't possibly trust them? I think I'd want to suggest, no, their claim is to be based on eyewitness accounts. They claim to be speaking to the people who are there, and I think that's plausible, given the sort of timescales that are involved, and given the fact that sometimes in people's minds, the story is a simple Jesus who was just a good man, and over time, the story got exaggerated, and by the second century, you know. Actually, you cannot find in history a simple Christianity where Jesus was just a good man, for the simple reason that if he was just a good man who died, there'd be no story. The very first sermons were, Jesus is Lord, and the Gospels are the writing up of what was already going around. So I think those are some of the questions to ask. Maybe that doesn't answer all the questions, but was there another part to that? Or was that?
No, I think that was pretty much it. I guess if that's something people want to talk, if that's something you want to talk more about, do come and grab you. You'll be around afterwards.